course. Today we will discuss mantra 7. Yesterday we discussed mantra 6, which talked about equal vision. So let's look at this section first, and then we will go into the mantra. So this is the second section of the Isha Upanishad, which is talking about understand Ishvara by spiritual vision. So in that, mantras 4 and 5 first talked about how to our normal vision and normal level of consciousness, Ishvara is inconceivable. And then, before we can understand Ishvara, we need to develop spiritual vision towards the things, people and events of this world. So that's the second section, 6, 7. And with this spiritual vision, then we'll be able to apply spiritual vision towards the Supreme Lord. So this is the last part, 7th verse of the second subsection within the second section of the Isha Upanishad. So let's look at the verse. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmeva bhuda vijanataha tatra ko mohakah shoka ekatvam anupashyataha. Yasmin, that person. So this is a continuation of the thread of thought from the previous verse. Yasmin, that person was mentioned in the last verse also. Sarvani bhutani, all living beings. Atmeva bhuda vijanataha. Vijanataha means to know. Know systematically, specially. Vishesha, vi is the prefix for janataha. How does the person know all living beings? Atmeva bhuda. One sees them at the spiritual platform. One sees all living beings as spiritual. Now, tatra ko moha kah shoka. For such a person, what is the moha? What is the shoka? What is the illusion? What is the lamentation? Why there is no moha lamentation? Because ekatvam anupashyataha. Such a person sees oneness. And anupashyataha. We discussed the word anupashyataha was there in the previous verse also. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmanyeva anupashyate sarvabhuteshu cha atmanam tato na vijugupsate sad atmanyeva anupashyate. So in both these mantras, the emphasis is on seeing with knowledge. Anupashyataha. So let's look at the translation. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks. Atmeva bhut. Now Srila Prabhupada explains what that Atmeva bhut, not only in the purport but also in the translation. In quality one with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Trako moha kah shoka. Now, the purport can be divided into 5 distinct sections. The whole purport is basically an elaboration on ekatvam, because the word ekatvam is like a feast for the impersonalists. And the Upanishads are generally considered to be books which talk about impersonalism, and that's why the impersonalists use them a lot. However, the Upanishads also talk about personal features of the Absolute Truth. Although they are not the emphasis, they are talked about. So Srila Prabhupada is elaborating on the concept of ekatvam based on the broader understanding of the Vedic scriptures, because here just the word ekatvam comes, oneness. But what does oneness mean actually? So Srila Prabhupada will explain this. First he talks about energy and energetic, and he gives the example of fire and heat and light. Then he uses that oneness, the energy and energetic are one, but then they are different also. What is the difference? With respect to drop and ocean. The drop is one in quality but is different in quantity. And then Srila Prabhupada gives the example of how the oneness is actually not just in quality, but it is also in interest. It is in inclinations, in desires, in intentions. So he gives the example of family. Every member in a family is different, but all of them are united in their interests. In a country, every citizen is individual, but at the same time, the nation is united as one one cohesive whole. So like that, oneness in interest. Now when the family is united together, then the family will be happy. But if every individual wants to pursue his or her own interests and doesn't care for others, then the family will be chaotic. So Prabhupada says similarly, in the spiritual realm also, when everybody becomes one in interest, then there is enjoyment. And then that is the point elaborated in the next paragraph. That is, separate interests cause shoka and moha. They cause lamentation and illusion. And therefore, the conclusion is that we should become one in interest with God. We should make the will of God as our own will. Now, let us look at these themes one by one. So, complete realization of ekatvam has two aspects. First is that we realize our oneness with the absolute truth in quality. Now when that happens, it brings detachment. Why? Because when I understand that I am not jada tattva, I am not matter, I am chitkana, I am spirit, I am conscious beings, then I understand that the dead matter cannot give me happiness. And temporary things will only cause me misery because I am eternal. So, when I understand that I am different from matter, because I am in quality one with the Absolute, Aham Brahmasmi, at that time, I become detached from matter. Because now I understand that matter cannot give me happiness because matter is unconscious, matter is temporary. I am conscious and eternal. I should seek happiness at the spiritual level. So therefore, realizing that I am spiritual, I am in one quality of the Absolute Truth, is desirable. But it is not the complete realization. One subordination in quantity to the Absolute Truth brings humility. So, if I just think that I am spirit, then that will bring pride, especially when I consider that, oh, all the other people are attached, I am detached. That can bring pride. But when I understand, yes, I am spirit, but there is a supreme spirit. And I am tiny, I am amsha of that spirit. So subordination in quantity to the absolute truth brings humility. So on the impersonal path, the oneness in quality is emphasized. That aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. Whereas on the path of devotion, the subordination and quantity is emphasized. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, Jivera Swarup Hoye Krishnera Nityadas. So that we are servants of Krishna is the primary emphasis of the devotees. The devotees also know that we are not the body, we are the soul. But the soul is not just some formless spirit. The soul has a real living relationship with the Absolute Truth. And that relationship is based on love and service. So when we understand that God is great and I am small, and my smallness is not just at a material level, even at a spiritual level I am small, that brings humility. So detachment and humility both are important. But if detachment alone comes first, and that is the primary focus, if the exclusive focus, then the detachment leads to pride. On the other hand, if humility comes first, I am not the enjoyer, I am the servant, and let me serve. Then that service gives a higher taste. And when that higher taste leads to detachment, that detachment doesn't bring pride. Because already the foundation of humility has been established based on the knowledge that I am the servant of God. We see in the Shikshashtakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasizes this progression when he says, in the third verse, humility. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. So be humbler than a blade of grass, be more tolerant than a tree. These are examples of humility in classic sense. So he first recommends humility, exalts humility, and then he talks about detachment. Madhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shware. So, the conclusion of both these verses is advancement towards devotion. It is. Third verse concludes with Kirtaniya Sadahari, which is advancing towards the devotion. And fourth verse concludes with Ahaituki Bhakti. So, both are talking about progress in devotion, but first, humility. Then humility, but it brings us closer to Krishna, gives us a higher taste by making us fixed in our service to Krishna. Then that makes detachment easier. So the error of impersonalism is, by focusing only on detachment, they become vulnerable to pride. And the greatest of all pride is, I am God. We'll discuss about this particular aspect of impersonalism, which is called Mayavad, later. But here, our focus is, Ekatvam is not in an absolute oneness sense. There are gradations and there are subtleties over there. Let's look further at this Ekatvam. Srila Prabhupada has given the example of fire. So, Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas analyzes these examples further. So, we know fire and light. Wherever fire is there, heat and light will be there. So, like that, the fire is the organic whole, but the fire spreads its influence to heat and light. Similarly, the Supreme Absolute Truth is there. And the Absolute Truth's influence spreads through heat and light. Now, when we want to talk about the difference between energy and energetic, for example, yesterday we talked about fire illuminates, fire burns. Now, burning and fire are the essentially, they are interconnected, but still they are different. Fire burns. So, if now in this we don't have the gradation of energies, this understanding, although energy and energetic are same, but if there are different distances between the energies and the energetic, some energy is closer, some energy is further, that cannot be understood through the example of fire and heat or light. So, Jiva Goswami gives another example to talk about energy and energetic. This example is of sun. Now, normally, we use the example of sun to talk about the three aspects of the Absolute Truth. The Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan. So, the all-pervading effulgence is the Brahma Jyoti. The localized orb, the reflection of the sun, different places, the analogy is given differently. The orbit of the sun, the orb of the sun, which when reflected in many places, in many rivers, is the sun, but it's still reflection expanded. So like that, the super soul, one supreme Lord is manifested in many places. And on the sun planet, when we enter and we see the sun god, there is Bhagavan. So that is a normal example that we give. Here, Jiva Goswami is giving the example not to explain the three aspects of the Absolute Truth, but he's explaining the various energies of the Absolute Truth. So let's look at this example. So when you look at the sun god is Krishna. So now the sun god is the predominating deity of the sun, and from there onwards, there is a radiance around its orbs. That means the sun is there and the effulgence that comes out all around. This is very intense, which is very close to it. That is the Swarupa Shakti. So we know that Krishna has three energies. Antaranga Shakti, Bahiranga Shakti and Tatastha Shakti. So, internal energy, external energy and marginal energy. So, internal energy is spiritual, the external energy is material and the marginal energy is also spiritual. All of us souls are the marginal energy. But we can go towards the Bahiranga or Antaranga because our position is variable. So, we are called as marginal energy. So, now Jiva Goswami is using the example of sun to explain these three energies and their relationship with the Absolute Truth. So, when the sun is there, the effulgence around the sun, just close around, not its distant sun rays that are going all around, just around the sun there is a blazing effulgence. That is the Swarupa Shakti. And then the rays that shoot out from the sun and go far away, they are also coming from the sun, but they are spreading far. That is the Tatastha Shakti. And then, the sun may be reflected in a river or in a pot, and that is the Bahiranga Shakti. So here, The point of the example is that although all these three, the radiance around the sun, the rays of the sun, and the reflection, these all three R's, radiance, rays, reflection, all three are coming from the sun. In that sense, all three are the energies of the sun. But although all three are the energies, all three do not manifest the sun's power in the same degree. The radiance is much, much closer to the sun, whereas the reflection is further away, and the heat of the sun, the blaze of the sun, will not be manifested in the reflection. So like that, the Antaranga Shakti is conscious. So the supreme consciousness of the Supreme Absolute Truth is also manifested in the Antaranga Shakti. The sun ray also has the heat and the illuminating capacity of the sun. But that is less, and as sun ray goes, keep going further and further and further away, then what will happen is eventually it will become cold and old and it will perish. So the potency of the Atma to act spiritually becomes lesser and lesser when the Atma becomes more and more distant from the soul. So that is the Tatastha Shakti. Tatastha Shakti is coming from the Supreme Lord, but it has a tendency to go away. And the further it goes away, the more it becomes into material influence, the less it shows its spiritual nature. Now the reflection in the water of the sun is also coming from the sun. But actually neither the heat nor the illuminating capacity of the sun will be manifested through the reflection. So therefore here the jada tattva, the matter is talked about. Now matter also comes from the Absolute Truth. Matter is also an energy of the Absolute Truth. Matter does not exhibit consciousness. Matter is not eternal. So in this way, the Lord is the source of all energies, yet there are gradations in his energies. So here the point is that not only are the energies non-different from the Lord, but they are also different. Not only are they different from the Lord in one sense, but they are also different internally. There are different kinds of energies. So this Achintya Bheda Bheda is a very profound concept which explains the relationship of the Lord with the Absolute, or with the world, with various components of the world, with the souls also. So this is the nature of the Lord and his energies. So again, what are we talking about over here? Exploring the concept Ekatvam. So there is oneness because everything ultimately is dependent on the sun, but still within the oneness there is variety. So see the full picture of oneness. Oneness, nowadays it's a popular slogan, unity in diversity. Is there, for example, there may be a nation which has many people from different races, different religions, different languages, different cultures. They say, we should all be united. We want national integration. So unity in diversity is a popular phrase. And there is importance to unity in diversity, but at the same time, in the spiritual reality, there is not just unity in diversity, there is also diversity in unity. What does that mean? That actually there is material variety. So there is male, there is female, there is Brahmana, there is Shudra, there is wealthy, there is poor. Now, all this variety is there at the material level. But beyond that, there is unity. Unity is that all of them are souls. And as souls, all of them are equal. So, from the variety of this world, we come to the unity. So, this is the first step in spiritual realization. However, beyond that unity, there is diversity also. What is the diversity? That all those souls, they are all souls. None of them are whatever their material bodies presently are. But as souls, they are not entirely just Xerox copies of each other, clones of each other. Every soul is an individual. And every soul is individually unique. And every soul has a unique relationship with Krishna. So at the spiritual level, they are all distinct. So now what is the unity if they are all distinct? They all love Krishna. They all serve Krishna. And they all delight in loving and serving Krishna. So there is diversity in unity also. So bhakti takes us beyond unity in diversity to diversity in unity. Let's understand this further. Prabhupada uses the example of the rasa dance in this particular purport. And what is the principle of the rasa dance? All the gopis were united in the sense that when Krishna called with his flute, all the gopis came to Krishna. They were united in their love for Krishna. At the same time, every gopi is uniquely individual and her love for Krishna is uniquely individual. In Krishna's relationships, every gopi adds a special flavor that would not be there if she had not been there. So Krishna is a rasa raj. He is the lord of all rasas and he enjoys rasas in relationship with each gopi. So each gopi has her own flavor of relationship. So now, for example, in the 10th canto, the chapters 29 to 33 are called as the Rasa Panchadhyaya, and they are considered to be the climax of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, the 10th canto is the face of the Supreme Lord, and Rasa Panchadhyaya is like the beautiful smile of the Supreme Lord. So, if the Rasa Panchadhyaya is like the smile, within that, the 31st chapter, which is the gopis' prayers of separation, they are the most intense in their devotional fervor. And those prayers are started by Shukadev Goswami with a generic describer, Shri Gopya Uchuhu. So Uvacha is singular, Uchuhu is plural. So Shri Gopya Uchuhu, so the gopis said. So now, is it that when all those prayers are described, one of those prayers is the famous Tavakathamritam Tapta Jeevanam. This is a very famous prayer which talks about how the devotees glorify the Supreme Lord and they extinguish the blazing fire of material existence. So, when the gopis are singing these prayers, starting from Jayati Te Dhikam Janmanavraja, so like that they recite various prayers. So are all the gopis actually collectively singing these prayers? Have they all thought of it? Have they done some rehearsal of all these prayers so that they can all recite in chorus? No. Actually speaking, Jiva Goswami in Gopal Champu analyzes each prayer and he describes, based on the knowledge of the mentality, on the attitude, the heart of each devotee, he says, this prayer is said by Lalita Devi. This prayer is said by Vishakha Devi. This prayer is said by Radharani. This prayer is said by Champaklata. So he describes that. But the point is, Shukadeva Goswami was describing all the gopis have one common aspiration. They are all heartbroken in separation from Krishna and they all are longing for Krishna to come back. And all the gopis, whatever prayers they are offering, they are intended to call Krishna back. So there is that unity. The unity is that they all love Krishna, they all want Krishna to reappear. But at the same time, every gopi has her heart and from her heart's longing comes forth a prayer. The prayer that begs to Krishna, please come back. So, this is a symphony of love. In a symphony, there are all different musical instruments, but there is a main orchestrator and all the instruments come together and produce a magnificent musical performance. So, like that, all the gopis, they are individuals. So, they are all different. But at the same time, they are one in their desire to love Krishna, to call to Krishna to appear, and to serve Him and please Him. So this is how, in the spiritual realm, there is not just unity in diversity, there is diversity in unity also. So the gopis, there is ekatvam. In what sense? They all love Krishna, they all want to please Krishna. But the ekatvam is not a barren oneness. The ekatvam is a fertile reciprocation. It's a rich reciprocation. And that is what the Vedic scriptures ultimately lead to. Now we may say that where is this given in the Isha Upanishad? Actually, the Upanishads are transitional literature. They take people from material forms to spiritual forms. So, they will hint at the personal aspect. And we will see this as we go in the last section of the Isha Upanishad more clearly. There we will see from mantras 14 to 18 how the personal aspect of the Lord is invoked and the absolute to the soul. Please reveal your face. Tattam Bhushan Bhavarunu, Satyam Dharmaya Drishtaye. So Mukham, please show your face, please show your true nature, please remove the covering. So that is actually talking about something very deep. And what is that deep thing being talked about? That is that the Lord has a personal form. But that personal form is not talked about in the Upanishads. So Srila Prabhupada is giving us the full understanding of Ekatvam based on not just what the Upanishads are talking about, but based on what the full body of Vedic literature is talking about. Now, let's move forward. So here Srila Prabhupada hints at the example of the river, the drop and the ocean. So this, he says the drop is one in quality, the drop is different in quantity. So the impersonalists often take this example and they say, okay, they take the ocean metaphor and they use it normally for the river. So when the river goes into the ocean, the river merges into the ocean. And like that, all of us have to go to the absolute truth and we merge into the absolute truth. So this is also a very visually evocative metaphor. You can imagine a river rushing down and entering with the river and merging. So people think this is the goal of the goal of spiritual life, that we have to merge into the absolute truth. However, this example of river going to the ocean, it doesn't just talk about merging. It actually talks about meeting. So there is a aspect of this metaphor that is completely neglected by the impersonalists. And that aspect is talked about in the Vedic literature repeatedly, especially in the bhakti literature. That aspect is the flow aspect. So the devotees talk about the let my heart flow towards Krishna. So actually this metaphor, the same river ocean metaphor, comes twice in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Once it comes in 329.11, where the Lord is describing the characteristics of his devotees. And second time it comes in 1842, where the devotee is calling out to the Lord. And the devotee is praying to the Lord, my dear Lord, please allow me to love you. So let's look at these two metaphors, these two expressions. So this is 329.11. Here Kapil Dev is instructing his mother Devahuti and he's describing the characteristics of his devotees. And he says, Madguna Shruti Matrena Mahi Sarva Guhashaye Mano Gatiravichinna Yatha Ganga Ambhaso Ambudau. So Yatha Ganga Ambhaso Ambudau. So Ganga Ambhasa is the water of Ganga, moves towards the ocean. Similarly, when my devotees hear about my glories, Madguna Shruti Matrena, Mai Sarva Guhashaye, they hear about me and I am in their heart. So what happens? Their consciousness is drawn towards me. Manogatir Avichinna, without any distraction, without any obstacles, just as the river flows towards the ocean, what flows? They say that the mind of the devotee flows. Mano gati ravichinna. It is not that the devotee merges. So Lord is saying, he's describing his pure devotees and glorifying them, that their consciousness flows towards me just as a river flows towards the ocean. Now, the same example, this is from the Lord's perspective. Now, Kunti Maharani also prays the same thing from her perspective. So 1842, she says that, my dear Lord, let my consciousness flow towards you just as the Ganga flows towards the ocean. So now, in this 1842 purport, Vishnu Chakra Thakur gives a very beautiful insight. He says that when a river flows towards the ocean, two things happen. That when the river flows towards the ocean, the river holds nothing back and nothing holds the river back. What does it mean? And he says, similarly, a devotee holds nothing back and nothing holds a devotee back. So a river holds nothing back means that when the river is flowing towards the ocean, the river doesn't think, oh, I want to keep some water for myself. The river lets all its water flow towards the ocean. And similarly, when the river is flowing towards the ocean, nothing holds the river back. Means there may be some obstacles, so the river will go down below the obstacle, around the obstacle to the right, around the obstacle towards the left, above the obstacle, the river will somehow or the other find its way beyond the obstacle. Sometimes it may just go right through the obstacle, pushing it apart, eroding it, burrowing it, whatever way. So, just as the river moves towards the ocean, similarly, the devotee's mind goes towards Krishna. So, a devotee holds nothing back, and nothing holds a devotee back. So, nothing holds a devotee back refers to external obstacles in the path of devotional service, and a devotee holds nothing back refers to the internal commitment to devotional service. So, nothing holds a devotee back means, no matter how difficult a situation may be, a devotee finds some way to keep serving Krishna, some way to keep remembering Krishna. So sometimes a devotee may get some accident because of which the devotee may not be able to serve the Lord physically. The devotee will find some other service. Even if I am not physically steady, let me find some other way by which I can serve Krishna. Sometimes a devotee may not be able to speak. The throat may get spoiled. The devotee may not be able to chant. The devotee can chant in the mind. The devotee can think of the deities. We can even do manas puja. Even if you're not able to physically do services, you can do manas puja and keep serving Krishna that way. So, nothing holds a devotee back. There are many occasions when devotees were put in very difficult situations because of their determination to practice devotional service in places where the culture and the people were hostile to the practice of devotional service. So once the devotees were distributing books in America, and in a particular city, there were the mayor and there was the sheriff. And the mayor had given permission to the devotees to distribute books. But the mayor and sheriff had a cross with each other. And the mayor had gone out station and the sheriff was there. And the police reported these devotees are dancing and singing and they are creating a nuisance. So the sheriff said, arrest them. And the devotees were arrested and put in jail just for distributing books. And then when they were in the jail, actually it was Sunday morning, and they were planning to go back to the temple, and there was going to be a Sunday feast, and they were dancing, singing, and feasting, and class, all that was there. So what the devotees decided, that they were so crestfallen initially that we will not be able to go back to the temple, we have been away from the temple for so long. But then one of them got the idea that, actually, Krishna accepts Manas Puja also. So let us have a Sunday feast in the jail. We will have a Manas Sunday feast. So all the devotees here say, I'll cook puris, I'll cook pakodas, I will cook pulava, I'll cook halwa, I will cook paneer sabji. And all the devotees got busy cooking. And they became so busy in their mind, they were planning and preparing and praying, you know, let this get cooked deliciously. And all of them were busy cooking. And then in the jail itself, they had a real Sunday feast. A senior devotee gave class over there. And after that, they had real kirtans. And then when they sat down for feasting, so all the devotees sat down and some devotees were serving. And when the devotees had Sunday feast over there, you know, normally the devotees, when we have Sunday feast, the items that we like, they are sometimes too less. Or even we like them and they are a lot also, we can't eat them enough. So devotees said, this was the best Sunday feast we ever had. No item was in shortage and nobody suffered from digestive problems. So now the devotees are jubilantly doing this sort of Manas Sunday feast and they were happy. The guards in the prison, they were watching. What are these devotees doing? They look like crazy, but actually they are happy. He said, they are inside the jail, we are outside. And we are not as happy as they are. What are they doing? And then as they were doing like this, the temple president of the temple contacted the mayor and got the permission. And then they got a letter. And the letter came and the devotees were released from the jail. And they came out of the jail and they went to the Sunday program and they had a real feast over there also. So the point is that nothing holds a devotee back. A devotee can keep serving Krishna in any and every situation. Srila Prabhupada, even when he was old, so old and so sickly, that practically his voice was not audible. But still his consciousness was clear. He was thinking of Krishna and the devotees were keeping a dictaphone right next to his lips. And he was dictating. And he was giving his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the glory of an exalted devotee. Nothing holds a devotee back. And similarly, a devotee holds nothing back. That means just as a river doesn't hold any water back all its water it offers to the ocean. Similarly, a devotee offers everything to Krishna. So, all the heart, tad buddhaya stadatmanas tan nishthas tad parayanaha. In 5.17 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes how one's buddhi, one's faith, one's mind, one's goal, stadatma tan nishthas tad parayanaha. Everything one offers, then one moves swiftly and quickly on the path back to Godhead. So in this way, this is actually the essence of this river-ocean metaphor. It is not merging, but it is meeting. And meeting in a way that nothing can stop. In fact, the same example of river and ocean is used even by the Yagyik Brahman Patnis in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In chapter 23, the Yagyik Brahman Patnis, when they come to Krishna, and Krishna tells them, please go back. I'm happy that you have come and you offered this food. I accept it. Now you can go back. So Kavi Karanapur in Anandavan Champu has elaborated on this pastime based on his divine realizations. And he says that the Yagyik Brahman Patni is described to Krishna. Krishna, you are telling us to go back? How can we go back? When a river leaves the mountain and comes to the ocean, how can the river go back to the mountain? The river must stay with the mountain. The river must stay with the ocean. The river cannot go back. And Krishna is moved by the devotion. And he says, yes, you don't have to go back. Your hearts will always be with me. You have come here, you have offered your hearts, you have offered your whole being to me. I accept your hearts. But because you are already married, because you are Brahman Patnis, I request you that I have accepted your heart's offering of love, but the way I want you to serve me is by going back and doing your duties. So actually you're not going back. The river that has come to the ocean, the meeting has happened, and the meeting is forever. The meeting of the hearts is going to be forever. But as a, because of social obligation, you go and continue your duties and I will be there with you in your heart. So the point is, the ekatvam is not simplistic that we just go into the river goes into the ocean, merges into the ocean, and everything is finished. No, the ekatvam is dynamic. It's constantly. It's not a merging but a meeting. There, when two people are in love, they are two and yet they are one. They are two as individuals, but they are one in heart. They both want to please each other. They won't want to have a constant meeting of the hearts. So that is the essence of the ekatvam metaphor. And this is the meaning which is revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Puranas, which actually clarify and illuminate what is being taught in the Upanishads over here. So now, let's look at the verse further. So, the verse is essentially talking about Anupashyati. So, what is Anupashyati? So, Tatra ko moha kaha shoka ekatvam anupashyataha. One person sees oneness. So what is that oneness? Yesterday we discussed about how oneness is with respect to the potentiality of the students, not the qualification of the teacher. So now this anupashyataha, so actually if somebody just had to see ekatvam, to see oneness is not difficult. Prabhupada gives the example that when there is dark, we see nothing and everything seems to be one at that time. Now, if there's a dark over here, I would see nothing and I would see everything is one. But when light comes, then I see, oh, there is a wall here, there is a computer here, there is a chair here. So then I understand, oh, there is variety also. So actually, if one just has to see oneness, that is possible at a spiritual level. That's actually the preliminary spiritual vision. But anupashyataha means one sees that there is a variety within the oneness also. So ekatvam anupashyataha, not just ekatvam pashyataha, ekatvam anupashyataha. So now we will look at the way there can be different objects and there can be different visions towards this object, and this brings about different consequences. So let us look at this. So there is the object which may be material or spiritual, there is vision which may be material or spiritual, and depending on the particular combination there will be a particular consequence, and we'll give an example of that. So firstly, the object is material and the vision is material. then the consequence is that there is bondage. So for example, Pumsah Striya Mithuni Bhavameetam. A man sees a woman and he sees not a soul, but he's just a good-looking form. A woman sees a man and she doesn't see a soul. She just sees a male form. So then what happens in such situations? A man sees a woman as a sex machine, a woman sees a man as an ATM machine. And both of them have material vision. So what it leads to is Rudaya Granthimahu. It leads to bondage. So people get attracted to sense objects. So with the material object and a material vision, that leads to bondage. And that is what is predominantly there for most people. Now the second possibility is that the object is material and we have a spiritual vision to that. And then with such a vision, there is purification. Utility is the principle. So for example, now we have a laptop here, we have a projector, we have various technological devices. The technological devices themselves are material, but we see them as the energy of Krishna and we see them as meant for Krishna's service. So when the object is object is seen with a spiritual vision, then it can be engaged in Krishna's service. And by engaging it in Krishna's service, there is purification that happens. So underlying point is utility is the principle for this. So Srila Prabhupada demonstrated this in a very graphic way. Srila Prabhupada started the first ISKCON center in New York and then he went to San Francisco. And Srila Prabhupada was always thinking of newer and newer ways to engage devotees in Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport that actually this Krishna consciousness movement was practically invented by me. Invented means what? Not that he wrote the Bhagavad Gita. No, the Bhagavad Gita was there, the Vedic scriptures were there. But how to get people to practice devotional service? How to engage them practically? Rupa Goswami says that yena kena prakarena mana Krishna niveshit. Somehow or the other think of Krishna. That's what Padma Purana also says. But how to get the people who have been, whose only regulative principle was to break the regulative principles? So how to get such people to actually start practicing devotional service, to think of Krishna? So it is not easy. So for such people, Prabhupada thought of many ways. And one of the ways was the brilliant Rath Yatra festival that he came up with. So the Rath Yatra festival became immensely popular because the hippies at that time, they like to dance and sing and do wild things. And the wildest of all things was you dance in front of a dance on the right in the public street. And you're just pulling a chariot and having fun. So earlier if they would have done that, they would have been arrested. But when Srila Prabhupada started Rath Yatra, the hippies were dancing and singing on the streets and they were escorted by the police because it was a cultural festival coming from an ancient tradition. So this was Srila Prabhupada's genius. But how did the Rath Yatra festival start? You know, one day in San Francisco, in the balcony of the temple quarters where he was staying, Srila Prabhupada was chanting and walking along and he saw a truck, a flatbed truck. So all of us have seen flatbed trucks many times. But Srila Prabhupada saw the flatbed truck and he saw that as a pedestal for putting Jagannath Baldev Subhadra. And he thought if you put Jagannath Baldev Subhadra here and then tire and get people to pull it. And that way we can have a Rath Yatra festival. And then from that time onwards, that's how Jagannath Rath Yatra festival started. So this is a material object, but Srila Prabhupada saw it with a spiritual vision. And that led to the purification for so many people like that. Now, third possibility is that there is a spiritual object and there is a material vision to that. So this, if this happens, then there is aparad, there is offense. So Arche Vishnu Shiladi, there is a famous verse in the Padma Purana which says that if we see the deity to be stoned, then that is Naraki Buddhi, that is hellish mentality, that is offensive. It will lead to suffering. So, actually speaking, what happens when we see the deity as material? Somebody may say, but the deity is made of material elements. How can I not see the deity as material? Yes, the deity is made of material elements, but the deity is no longer material because Krishna has manifested over there. So, here the point is to not see the transcendental element at all, and to reduce that which is transcendental to the material platform, that is an offensive vision. So because of this offensive vision, many people get misled. And when they get misled, they commit aparad and they suffer. So to see the deity materially is to miss out on the enormous spiritual potential that is available for devotional advancement, which can be got by worshipping the deity. So essential, the essence of offense to see something is to see something spiritual materially. So for example, some people may say that actually my spiritual master is more advanced. Why? Because my spiritual master was born from a Brahmin family and your spiritual master is born in a low caste family. This is an offensive vision. Vaishnave jati buddhi. We should not see the jati of a Vaishnava. Actually, devotees, especially advanced devotees who have now become advanced enough to be spiritual masters, they have practiced devotional service for decades, and to consider them as lower or higher just based on their background, which was long, a long time ago, that is an erroneous vision, a seriously erroneous vision. So we are not, yes, they may have skin of a particular color, they may have come from a particular background, but that is only the external shell. The heart is a heart that has been sold out to Krishna for decades. And if we don't see that devotional side and just see the external material side, then we are committing a serious mistake. So to not see the material, to not see the spiritual, to see the material and to highlight the material to the exclusion of the spiritual, that is offensive. So by offense, at best, we miss out on spiritual advancement. So if I don't see the deity as spiritual, what will happen? I won't pray to the deity. I won't get the blessings of the deity to the same extent, and I'll miss out on spiritual advancement. At worst, if I see the deity as material, I can commit grievous sins, and that will lead to further suffering. So actually, the spiritual objects should be seen with spiritual vision. So that means when we look at the deity, we see the deity as Krishna. So now what will happen by this? This will also lead to purification, and it will even lead to ecstasy. So for us, in the initial stages of bhakti, it leads to purification. And in the advanced stages, it leads to ecstasy. That means, so if we move forward, purification means, say for example, when you go and take darshan of the deities. So when we take darshan of the deities, it is said that we should offer obeisances. Actually, for the advanced devotees, they don't have the rule that they should offer obeisances. Because when my beloved Lord is appearing, as soon as the Lord appears, the curtain opens, because of their love for Krishna, they faint in ecstasy and fall down. That is the extent of their love. Just the beholding of the deity, which is non-different from Krishna, causes them to faint in ecstasy. So for us, we don't faint and fall, but at least we should fall, it is. At least bow down to the deities. So the idea is that for us, by seeing the spiritual objects spiritually, we will be able to make spiritual advancement. We will become purified. So now when we say there is spiritual and there is material, there is the spiritual vision towards both. So is the deity material? No, the deity is not material. The deity is actually spiritual because Krishna has manifested through the deity. And we see the spiritual object spiritually. Then we lead to that, lead to, there is so much spiritual potency in that. And we make rapid spiritual advancement by this. So, anupashyata, ekatvam anupashyataha means what? To see everything spiritually. To see everything spiritually means, now if you look at this table, we'll see that the material vision creates problems. The material vision towards material objects creates bondage because we think they are for my enjoyment. And material vision towards spiritual objects also creates problems, creates suffering because we commit aparad. That means we see that this is just material and we disrespect it. So in both cases, the material vision creates problems. So it is the spiritual vision that is recommended. And a spiritual vision towards material objects and spiritual vision towards spiritual objects leads to purification, leads to elevation. So now spiritual vision towards spiritual objects doesn't mean a simplistic whitewash of everything as spiritual. It's not that we get everything is spiritual. No, the philosophy begins first with differentiating. This is matter, this is spirit. I am not the body, I am the soul. Before Srila Prabhupada went to America, there were many spiritual teachers who went, and they often emphasize Aham Brahmasmi. And even among the hippies, Aham Brahmasmi was a popular saying. aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, I am spirit, I am spirit, I am spirit. But Srila Prabhupada was the first spiritual teacher who categorically emphasized the practical application of aham brahmasmi. Prabhupada says aham brahmasmi means you are not the body and therefore give up sense gratification. This was something which practically nobody else taught. I am a soul, that is fine. But how will I realize that I am the soul? If I am still enjoying bodily pleasures, I am caught up with material desires, then I will stay in bodily consciousness. And if I stay in bodily consciousness, my repetition of aham brahmasmi is not going to lead to much benefit for me. So, the practical application of aham brahmasmi is, you're not the body, therefore minimize sense gratification. Give up sense gratification as much as possible. So, Srila Prabhupada helped us to apply spiritual principles practically. So, we can't whitewash everything as spiritual. I can't say the body is spiritual. So, I have to discriminate. This is prasad, this is not prasad. I can't say all food is spiritual. No. So, the ABC of spiritual life is to discriminate based on knowledge. And this is material, this is spiritual. Now, when we advance further, then we also see in the material the potential to be engaged in the service of the supreme spiritual reality, that is Krishna. So, that is what we mean by to cease with spiritual vision. So, we don't reject technology, because technology can be used in Krishna's service. Some impersonalists reject money. But Srila Prabhupada said, no, money is Lakshmi Devi, and Lakshmi Devi is meant for Narayana. Oh, actually, Hanuman did not reject Sita thinking that she was material. He went and found Sita and brought Sita back to Ram. Brought Sita's message back to Ram and then fought a war so that Sita could be united with Ram. Similarly, a devotee does not reject this material energy, especially the material energy and those material things that can be used in Krishna's service. A devotee works actively to engage them in Krishna's service. So, we have to find out what among the material things are useful, are usable in Krishna's service, and use those in Krishna's service. Now, not everything material may be usable. Now, prasad is food that we can take. If there is poison, poison is also material energy. But if I take poison, that will not be anukul to my bhakti. So, I cannot use that in Krishna's service. So, then I don't use it. So, when we say, see everything with spiritual vision, that means see in everything the potential to be used in Krishna's service and then use it appropriately. So, how different things can be used in Krishna's service, that will vary depending on our spiritual advancement, our specific service, our circumstances. We may be able to engage certain things in Krishna's service, we may not be able to engage certain things in Krishna's service. But spiritual vision is, ekatvam is what? Srila Prabhupada saw the whole world as ekatvam. What are that ekatvam? The whole world is filled with potential devotees. Everybody is a soul who is actually a devotee of Krishna. Yes, there is some covering. And if the covering is removed, then everybody will become a devotee. So, this was Srila Prabhupada's ekatvam vision. Many of the other devotees, Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, they were also in many ways advanced devotees. But when they went abroad, they went to Europe, and they got some success in meeting with elite people and getting their photographs clicked and giving some discourses which were very much appreciated. But as far as transforming the hearts of people were concerned, they were not very successful. And then they came back and told their spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur, these Europeans, they can't be changed. They are too much rooted in their culture. You can't change them. So when Srila Prabhupada went to America, what did he see? In the Jaladuta, when he was there in the last few days, he came to Boston Harbor, he wrote the song, Markine Bhagavad Dharma. And there, for an Indian who is going to America, America is the land of dreams for most Indians. And they're so excited, I'll see so many things and there'll be so much enjoyment. But Prabhupada did not see wealthy, prosperous, happy Americans. He saw forgetful, suffering souls being pulled by the modes of passion and ignorance. And he said, my dear Lord, please give me the words that will be understandable to them, that will enable them to understand your message and become happy. So this was the ekatvam vision. Srila Prabhupada did not see those people as Americans. He did not think, I am an Indian, they are Americans. he saw their cultural situation, their social situation, how that was keeping them away from Krishna, but he saw beyond that. He saw beyond the social and cultural conditioning to their souls. And he prayed to Krishna, please let my message reach their souls and elevate them. So the ekatvam of a true seer is not whitewashing everything as spiritual. It is seeing the spiritual beyond the material. That the material is there and the material has to be dealt with. But beyond the material side, there is the spiritual side. And that spiritual side has to be elevated, engaged in the best possible way. And Srila Prabhupada is expert in that. That's how he was able to get thousands and thousands of people who knew nothing about Krishna just a few weeks ago. A few weeks later, they had given up everything and dedicated their lives to Krishna. This happened because Srila Prabhupada saw the spiritual vision, saw with spiritual vision the spiritual potential, and he kindled that spiritual potential. And that spark, it just blazed. And then that spread Krishna consciousness so dramatically, miraculously, all over the world. This is really Katvam that we aspire for. Rather than seeing external conditionings of people, we focus on their essence. When we go for book distribution, when we go for outreach, we don't focus on how people look. Yes, we want to distribute Krishna consciousness to everyone. And if anybody has some spark of interest, we try to guide those people to come to Krishna in the best possible way that is there for them in that situation. This is Ekatvam. See the whole world as filled with the potential to be engaged in Krishna's service. See all souls as potentially Krishna's devotees, just waiting for their spark of devotion to be triggered, to be fueled and fanned by some devotee who comes fortunately into their lives. So I'll summarize. We started by discussing about, primarily, the whole class is about Ekatvam, about oneness. So let's go over the PPT ones. So we discussed first about how this purport talks about oneness between energy and energetic. And in this we discuss the fire example. So first we discuss about how oneness in quality with absolute truth brings detachment, but subordination in quantity to absolute truth brings humility. So we discussed about Shikshashtakam. First there is Dronadapi Sunihana, then there is Nadhanam Najanam Sundari. So bhaktas emphasize humility more than detachment. And then with Bhagavan and Shakti, we discuss the fire and light example, which talks about how energy and energetic are related. They're different yet non-different. And then for the concept of difference between the energies, Jiva Goswami gives the example of the sun, God, and the sun's radiance, sun's rays, and sun's reflection, referring to the Antaranga Shakti, the Tatastha Shakti, and the Bahiranga Shakti. And then we discussed about how the complete oneness is not just unity in diversity, but diversity in unity also. All the gopis, they are united in their love for Krishna, but each of them are individual and unique. And the oneness of the river-ocean metaphor is not the oneness of merging, but the oneness of meeting. Just as the river always flows towards the ocean, similarly a devotee's heart always flows towards Krishna. Nothing holds a devotee back, a devotee holds nothing back. And lastly, we discussed elaborately about seeing everything with a spiritual vision. So if we see material objects with material vision, that causes bondage. If we see material objects with spiritual vision, then we can become purified by engaging those objects in devotional service. If we see spiritual objects with material vision, we commit aparadhas. If we see spiritual objects with spiritual vision, in the sadhaka stage, it will bring out purification. And as we become more advanced, it will bring ecstasy. And lastly, we discussed, seeing with spiritual vision doesn't mean whitewashing everything as spiritual, but it means seeing everything as potential, having the potential to be engaged in Krishna's service, seeing everyone as potentially becoming Krishna's devotees, and then engaging them appropriately. Thank you very much. Shri Shopanishad ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Tai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol. Thank you.